Hi folks, it's your host Harmit, and you're listening to Tobin Talks. In this episode, we speak with a U of M researcher in the Department of Entomology about his team's discovery of a new sweat bee species. We follow that up with a discussion on sports psychology and how to maximize people's experiences within and around sports. Speaking of sports, our last interview is a spotlight on the U of M Bison's veteran soccer goalie. So get excited, folks, because it's about to be a good episode. Let's start off with research and tech editor Ella speaking to Department of Entomology's associate professor Jason Gibbs about his discovery of a new sweat bee species.
Yeah, so I'm actually an expert in sweat bee taxonomy. It's sort of my specialty. And I had a student, Joel Gardner, who was picking up on some research that I did for my own PhD. I worked on sweat bee taxonomy in Canada and kind of Eastern North America. And Joel was doing a lot of work in the Western states and provinces. And a colleague of mine, Thomas Honor Furco, who was at the Canadian Museum of Nature, was doing a survey of like sand-living wasps and bees, mm-hmm. sort of sand inland dune systems, kind of from Alberta to Manitoba. And in doing so, he collected a long series of particular species of sweat bees mm-hmm. and sent it to Joel and I to verify what species it was. And it turned out it was a species that no one had ever described before. Mm-hmm. So we actually had a few specimens of that species from one location in Alberta. So we were kind of vaguely aware that it existed, but Tom had collected this, you know, hundreds of them from multiple sites. Mm-hmm. So when Joel was working on a paper to sort of kind of update the Canadian sweat bees, we described that species and we named it after Dr. Huffer.
How, like, physically similar would you say that species that was found is to other sweat bees?
Sweat bees are kind of notorious. So they've been called morphologically monotonous. They've been called the bane of taxonomists. And I sort of call them a nightmare kind of taxon as well. So there's a lot of species. So in the single genus that this belongs to, Lassiblossom, there's over 1,900 described species, which is more than just about any sort of bee or wasp or ant. So you have a huge number of species and they sort of recently evolved, relatively speaking. So there's a lot of very similar looking species. So this particular new one looks quite similar to a relatively distinct species that's sort of widespread in North America. Mm-hmm. But it's restricted to such a small range of these sort of inland dune systems mm-hmm. that basically you have to go to the very specific habitats to find it. So you could collect sweat bees across Canada and spend years doing it. But if you don't go to particular sites, you'll never see.
And how significant would you say this finding is?
Anytime we find a new species, it's a pretty exciting discovery. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you sort of expect, you know, that if you go somewhere relatively remote, that you might be able, you know, that hasn't been visited by kind of Western scientists, you'll find a new species. Mm-hmm. So like if you went deep into the Amazon, you'll probably find things. But to find them in Canada is a bit surprising. You know, we don't have that many species of bees, relatively speaking. So that's kind of surprising. But it's also really interesting because it sort of adds to the level of importance of these sort of dune systems. Because one of the things that Dr. Onfrigo was interested in was the effect that sort of encroaching vegetation has on the sort of diversity of kind of these sand-loving bees and wasps. So essentially, you know, these are sort of a lot of the open sand is being sort of encroached upon. You know, there's practices sort of put in place to sort of, you know, prevent burning of, you know, wildfires in some of these sort of protected areas. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, you get all this sort of areas coming encroached and you lose the open sand. So I think it's sort of, you know, Dr. Onofurco's study in general and the species in particular sort of help highlight how important those sort of open sand dunes mm-hmm. systems are.
Yeah. And sorry, I didn't get where exactly was the species found?
It was found in Alberta and Saskatchewan. So we do have some dune systems just similar in Manitoba, like the Spirit Sands and Spruce Woods is a famous example. But we collect bees there a lot, and we've never seen this species there. So it's really restricted. You know, in theory, you know, it's pretty close to Montana, but right now it's entirely restricted to a few sites in sort of Alberta and Saskatchewan.
Okay, and around when was this found?
Dr. Onofurco's study would have been kind of pre-pandemic, sort of, I guess, 2018 time period. Mm-hmm. And then the species was officially described, you know, a couple of years later.
Okay, and what would you say is next for you in entomology research and bee research?
Well, we're starting to do a lot more work kind of with kind of genomic data in the lab. So we're sort of starting some projects that are going to look at, you know, extract kind of genomic scale data from bees in prairies and in the sweat bees in particular, and try to understand more about their sort of evolutionary history, how, you know, different habitats affect sort of the evolutionary kind of diversity that's sort of present in the landscape, and also how to sort of better distinguish some of these really problematic similar species.
Up next, we have research and tech editor Ella interviewing Ben Schellenberg, assistant professor in the Faculty of Kinesiology and Recreation Management.
I study the things that people do, the activities that people do in their lives, and I focus mostly in sport. Because I'm in Faculty of Kinesiology and Recreation Management, so I focus mostly on sports. So we do lots of research with athletes, but also with sports fans, and a little bit of research with sports parents and coaches, but primarily athletes and fans. And we're really trying to understand how athletes and fans can maximize the benefits and their positive experiences that they get from doing these activities that they love to do. And also minimize any of the costs that might come from being an athlete or from being a fan.
Yeah, I see you do a lot of research regarding burnout. What do you normally see in regards to burnout in athletes and in fans?
We've been studying burnout in athletes. And burnout is a serious thing because it involves being exhausted, physically and emotionally exhausted from playing sport. But not only that, it comes with it affects your thoughts about your sport and your feelings about your sport. You start to get a sense that you're not accomplishing as much in sport as you used to. You start to devalue sport in your life and think it's not that great. So burnout is this cluster of exhaustion, but also these negative attitudes and opinions. And it's really bad. And there's also evidence recently that came out from other researchers showing that levels of burnout in athletes are actually starting to have been increasing over time. And so our research has studied different types of processes and variables that predict experiences of burnout. And one thing that we found recently is that burnout is lower, a lot lower, among athletes who tend to savor positive experiences. So when something really good happens in sport, you can win a championship, you can win a game, you can make a friend, you can learn a new skill, all these great things that happen in sport. Athletes who are really good at savoring the moment, maximizing these positive feelings by reflecting on how it makes them feel, sharing them with a friend, celebrating their successes. People who really savor good things in sport tend to report lower levels of burnout. So we've seen that even in longitudinal studies, savoring predicts lower levels of burnout in the future. So savoring is one of these things that people can do that might help them, again, maximize these positive experiences and minimize burnout, which is one of these negative outcomes.
You also focus on themes like self-compassion and perfectionism. Could you tell me a little bit about those?
Yeah, these are two really, really fascinating topics. So self-compassion is so fascinating because it is a way that people, how people can react to negative events, mm-hmm. bad things that happen, mistakes, errors, anything sort of negative that you do. Mm-hmm. It involves being kind to yourself. Mm-hmm. It also involves adopting a sense of mindfulness, not getting too swept up in what's going on, mm-hmm. and a sense of common humanity, which involves thinking that, you know, mistakes happen to everybody.
Yeah.
It's part of being human, is making mistakes. So self-compassion is these sort of three components: self-kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. Research on self-compassion started 20 years ago, 2003. It has been overwhelming, the benefits of being self-compassionate. Mm-hmm. Self-compassion is such a good thing. Everybody should be self-compassionate mm-hmm. when they make mistakes. So people tend to be self-compassionate in sport. Loads of research, primarily not from our lab, but from others, showing that these are people who are more motivated, they're happier, they're healthier, everything. Mm-hmm. So self-compassion is one of these skills that can be learned that can potentially, almost certainly maximize people's experiences in sport. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's self-compassion. The other topic we've been studying is perfectionism, which has had a really interesting history because, you know, in sport, as athletes, mm-hmm. to succeed, to win, often you have to try to be perfect, mm-hmm. right? Even a little mistake can cost you a game.
Yeah.
And research in perfectionism has treated perfectionism as a multidimensional construct. There's so much, it's an overwhelming topic because so many different people have different ideas about perfectionism. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, there's sort of two dimensions of perfectionism. Mm-hmm. There's a striving component. So people are trying to strive to be perfect. Mm-hmm. There's also a concerns component. So mm-hmm. this is when you're concerned about what other people think about you when you don't reach perfection mm-hmm. or when you make a mistake, you're hard on yourself. You have all these concerns about imperfection. People have high levels of these concerns, predicts a whole bunch of bad things. Mm-hmm. Like you do not want to have high levels of perfectionistic concerns. Mm-hmm. But there's been some debate about the strivings component. Some people say, well, in certain situations, if you have high levels of striving, it can lead to great things for athletes. Mm-hmm. This has rubbed people the wrong way. This conclusion that perfectionistic strivings could possibly be an adaptive state of affairs has been really problematic, mm-hmm. primarily because perfection is impossible. We're human beings. We always make mistakes. And so the idea that you should try to be perfect doesn't make a lot of sense to people, especially people in the clinical field. Perfection is impossible, so it seems kind of silly to try to be perfect. Mm-hmm. So in sport, this has certainly been the case where people have debated this. And so one of my collaborators from the University of Ottawa, he has been developing a new way of thinking about perfectionism, mm-hmm. which distinguishes trying to be perfect from trying to be excellent.
Okay.
And this is the distinction that we haven't really made before. So a lot of these people who... The idea goes that on the journey to trying to be perfect, people reach excellence. And so the really thing we need to study is whether or not it's better to be a perfectionist versus somebody who just tries to be excellent mm-hmm. and not necessarily perfect. Mm-hmm. That's the comparison. So we haven't published anything in sport yet. Mm-hmm. It's coming within the next year. But we've been looking at athletes who are perfectionists versus those who pursue excellence. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be any advantages of trying to be perfect beyond trying to be excellent. There is no debate. You should try to be excellent if you're competing, especially in high level sport. Mm-hmm. There's no debate about that. It's okay to try to be good at something. Mm-hmm. But what's the difference in taking that extra step of trying to go from good to perfect?
Okay.
There doesn't seem to be any advantage there. Actually, there seems to be some disadvantages. Some cases. Mm-hmm. So it could be harmful to try to be perfect. Mm-hmm. The data will come out soon, but mm-hmm. the story is just try to be good. Just try to be as good as you can be. Don't try to be perfect.
Okay.
Which, believe it or not, it's taken decades to get to this point.
Wow. And what are some of the trends you've seen when it comes to athletes that are chasing perfectionism as opposed to excellence?
Well, like I said, we haven't done a whole lot in sport, but the overall trend, broadly speaking, most of the data we have on perfectionism, just generally speaking, comes from undergraduate students. Because mm-hmm. as you might know, when we're doing psychological research, psych students are required to do research credits as part of their program. So we know a lot. We have a lot of data from undergraduate students. And since the 1980s, levels of perfectionism, however you want to measure it, strivings, concerns, however you want to slice it, they've been going up. They've been increasing. So it's a growing, if perfectionism is indeed a problem, if you can call it a problem, it's a growing problem. So this is something we need to get a handle on quite quickly.
And are there any other studies that you've been a part of that you've done so far?
I guess the last topic that we study in the lab is passion.
Okay.
So the passion that people have for their favorite activities. And just like with perfectionism, there seem to be two dimensions of passion. There's a harmonious passion dimension. These are people who love their activity, but they're in control of it, and they can take a day off. If you're a passionate Winnipeg Jets fan, you love supporting the Winnipeg Jets, but you can take a day off. It's not a big deal. You can skip a game. The other type of passion is obsessive passion. When you love your activity and you feel kind of compelled to, you feel like you need to engage in it. Passionate Winnipeg Jets fans, if you have high levels of obsessive passion, you love to watch the Winnipeg Jets play, and it's really hard for you to skip a game. And when you skip a game, it's really hard for you to focus on what you're doing because there's a game going on. Kind of affects your focus. And generally speaking, harmonious passion predicts all types of positive outcomes. In addition to performance. So a lot of people think that if you're an athlete, you need to be obsessed to reach the highest levels of performance. You have to think about your sport nonstop, 24 hours a day. That's how you're going to get ahead. The data we've seen so far doesn't support that. So you can reach equal levels of performance, high levels of performance by being highly harmoniously passionate. So you can have a sense of balance in your life in whatever you do and still perform quite well. You don't need to be obsessed.
What would you say is the overall goal of your research?
People love to do things in their free time, in their leisure time, when they're not in school or at work. People have limited time to devote to these meaningful activities in their lives. And I'm hoping that the research we're doing can maximize people's experiences during this time. Like, these are time people want to relax, they want to be excited, they want to be engaged, they want to experience flow, they don't want to be burnt out. They don't want to be anxious when they're devoting this time to different activities. I'm hoping that the research we're doing can maximize their experiences. Collectively maximize the benefits that people are getting in their life, their positive experiences from these different activities.
What got you interested in your research? Or could you give me a little bit of background of how you got into your research?
I have a psychology background. I did my undergraduate degree and my PhD degree in psychology, and I'm also interested in the sport world. I used to play sports in high school and in university. I like to watch sports when I have free time. That's where I devote a lot of my free time to, is sports. So I've always been interested in all the things that go on in athletes, why athletes sometimes thrive and sometimes they don't, why sports fans sometimes are really engaged and happy, and sometimes it appears that being a sports fan can lead to some really nasty outcomes for the people, and also sports fans can go do things like riot. You know, even when their team wins, there could be some horrible things that happen. So these have always been fascinating for me. So I get to study sort of psychology and sports, so it's sort of blending.
Continuing the sports theme, let's end off this episode with our sports editor, Grace, shining a spotlight on the Bison's veteran soccer goalie, Karina Baggy.
And you're originally from Kelowna, BC.
Yes.
That's so cool. I love BC. So for some background, so what drew you to soccer? Because I know like a lot of people play a bunch of sports and then, you know, they sort of settle on one.
Yeah, so growing up, I definitely was a multi-sport athlete. I played lacrosse, basketball, volleyball, soccer, and then throughout high school, it was mainly just like
the three, so basketball, volleyball, and soccer.
Right.
Yeah. And then it wasn't until like grade 11 where I was debating quitting volleyball or quitting soccer for volleyball.
Oh.
But then I was like, you know what? I really enjoy soccer because I am tall and that does help as a goalie.
Yes.
And I do, I mean, this is going to sound a little weird, but I do like the risk involved with being a goalie, just that little added pressure. I feel like I sometimes thrive under that.
Nice.
So that was that. And then plus I always just played soccer since I was 4 years old. So that was another key thing to stick with it, that I was just playing it for so long and I've allocated so much time to it. And then I really enjoyed being a goalie since I was, I think, 14. So I wanted to kind of see where it would take me.
Nice. And yeah, okay, so you kind of mentioned it. Because I was going to ask what drew you to goalkeeper, because I love goalies, but I know I could never mentally be a goalie.
Yeah, sure. So when I was, I think, 13, I was still, like, in youth soccer, and then we have to do, like, the rotation where everyone would try in that.
And yes. I did that once, and it was awful. It was just awful, and yeah. I was just like, I don't want to be a goaltender.
No, I definitely can resonate with that. My friend's mom, she's our coach, and she's like, you know what, like, you're a bit above average height for the typical youth at this point, so just like stick with it, like you could have potential in that. Then the next year it was like tryouts for a high performance team, so I tried out as a goalie and then kind of just stuck with it, and then ended up developing in the role and training and whatnot. And then I really liked the practices and how that was. And that was kind of funny because the same coach, her daughter and I played soccer together, and then she ended up coming out for her first year at Manitoba. So one of my really good friends, we lived together for the first little bit.
Oh, that's so sweet. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a nice connection.
Yeah.
And that that leads into my next question. How'd you come about playing for the Bisons?
I got in contact with Vanessa, I think in my grade 10 or 11 year of high school. She came out to a showcase in Vancouver, and then through that we were just talking ever since, and then she invited me out to the May camp, and I came, visited the facility, and kind of fell in love with it.
Nice.
There's a lot of great support staff, and then just like meeting the team and seeing how they interact with each other just felt right, because I did a couple other like visits and talking to other coaches and whatnot, and I don't know, just felt really homey and welcoming, like super welcoming. Vanessa does a great job, and
I've only heard good things, so that's great.
Yeah.
And then, okay, I've looked over your career stats again. You improve every year. Like, it's amazing. Like, I think you're one goal allowed now per game. Like, that's incredible. And I mean, and then you went on that huge, like, shutout run last year.
Yeah.
That was amazing. So, like, what's sort of creating that success? Like, goals against have, like, dropped from, like, 2.83, now you're 1.01. That's, like, epic. Do you have, like, is there anything you've been doing differently, or just loving the game? I don't know.
I honestly don't know. Like, a lot of it, I mean, to start off with, it's just my team. Like,
yeah.
I feel like the team just does a great job in the back, and not even just the back line, too. Like, the whole team has a whole effort in defending. Sometimes we have, like, forwards or even midfields come back into the attack or in the defense, and that in itself is just a huge thing to have such great teammates surrounding you with that.
Yeah.
But, I think just for myself personally, every year, just like finding what my weaknesses are and just working on that a little bit more to see where I can get better or where I can improve my game. And then the biggest thing too, I noticed, especially for my second to, I guess, I want to say fourth year, because COVID was kind of just that third year, but
right,
obviously didn't really happen, was just my mental game. I think my biggest shift was stop putting so much pressure on myself, because in my second year, I would put way too much pressure on myself. And
okay.
I've noticed that it wouldn't allow me to perform to my best. So once I kind of took that off and just put more emphasis on having fun, I feel like everything just kind of fell into place.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, have fun. Soccer's fun.
No, exactly.
I mean, it's stressful when you're a goalie, so I'm glad you're allowed to have fun. You've allowed yourself to have fun.
Yeah.
My favorite career stat of yours, is this true? You registered a shot on goal in 2021?
I did.
Oh my god, okay. Okay, that's amazing. Can you tell me about that? I just feel like I gotta know. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do, actually. I actually looked at the clip not long ago, so I'm doing some film stuff right now.
Nice.
But we were playing Regina, and we didn't have a whole lot of attack going, and I think it was towards like the last 5 minutes or so. So Vanessa was like, hey, like everyone just get up, Karina have a go. And I mean, it was a little bit of a weak lob, but I mean, it got to her head, so I guess it was a shot.
That's amazing. Okay. Yeah. That's like one of the best stats ever. That's like you're like Marty Broder or something. He used to register assists all the time. So the 2023 season.
Beginning of August, we are traveling to Edmonton to play U of A and McEwen. So okay. We'll be there. And then on August 11th, we'll be heading down to North Dakota to play UND, NDSU, and then SDSU. So we'll go to North and South Dakota and return on the 17th. And then the week after, we start season.
But what are you planning on doing this season? Obviously winning. And I don't know, do you want to elaborate on?
So definitely winning is the goal. Last year, we started off pretty good. Then we had a little, not, I don't want to say slump in the beginning, but we had a little lull kind of. So I think this year, I think a good team goal for all of us is to just improve on that and just stay consistent throughout the season and kind of focus on maybe what didn't work well and reviewing film to focus on that because we don't want to make the same mistakes and we want to definitely improve it. Vanessa was a big, she always puts big emphasis on how the team is getting or improving every year. So I think this year definitely be great with that too. Unfortunately, last year we did lose a couple of players, or we actually lost a lot of players who had key positions on the team. But I think this year too, we have a lot of good rookies coming onto the team, which could definitely help with that. So it's going to be exciting to see how they could fit in and how we all race the game together.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We've got Bisons doing awesome stuff. Do you have any, now that, like, this might be a bit too soon to think about, but are you thinking of, you know, involving yourself in soccer later on, like once you're no longer eligible, like to play?
That's actually what I'm doing with film right now. I'm very interested in taking it to the next level if I can, if there's opportunities to. I know there's a lot of work I have to, or a lot of improvements I have to work on, but I mean, I'm ready for it and I would love to have the opportunity if it comes. I don't think I'm quite ready to give it up yet.
So. Yeah, exactly. And you're, like, you're literally just getting better the more time goes on, so.
Yeah.
That's really, you know, that's really good.
Well, folks, that's everything for today's Tobin Talks episode. If you have any questions, concerns, or suggestions, please feel free to email me at audio@themanitobin.com. You can listen to Tobin Talks anytime on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it, and you can pick up a copy of The Manitobin from stands all throughout campus. Tune in on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. to be the first to hear new Tobin Talks episodes. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you then.